At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
France, 1945. Chaos and confusion reign at the conclusion of the Second World War. As Europe tries to rebuild the rubble, a tale unfolds of a missing artistic masterpiece, a Bugatti. A car like no other, la voiture noire, the black car. Did the Nazis steal this prized automobile? Was it destroyed? Or is it hidden away, waiting to be discovered? La voiture noire, if found, would be the most expensive car in the world, worth hundreds of millions of dollars. This is a study of strange.
Of the two of us, you are definitely more Conan-like, right?
I'll take it. All right, here, I'm going to start.
Fine. Yeah.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Michael May. Today, I'm joined by a gentleman named Timothy Donahue. Tim, how you doing?
I don't think you've ever called me a gentleman in your entire life.
There's a
Something's
first time.
Totally wrong. Are you in duress? Like, is there
it's a first time.
There's a gun in the room. Well, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Yes. So Tim was on one of my first episodes.
That's right.
What did we talk about? Was it spirit photography? I think it was spirit photography.
Yeah. There was ectoplasm and all kinds of things.
Yeah, it's good stuff. That actually is a very good episode. People should go back and listen to it. I think my format has gotten a little more concise than it used to be, but that's still a fun topic. Today we have something a little, I guess spirit photography is a relatively light topic.
I mean, they're dead people involved, so it's a little bit.
Yeah, so it's a little more macabre today.
It's mostly just like, visual effects. That's really a visual effects. Early 20th century visual effects.
But today we're talking about a treasure, a real life treasure hunt. Mm-hmm. And this one doesn't involve pirates or buried pieces of eight. This is about.
Losing them fast. don't give away too much. That's a good one. There might be pirates.
There might be pirates.
Maybe there's the Declaration of Independence. You never know.
I mean, it's closer to that. There are Nazis involved, and this is a kinetic piece of art that is missing, mm-hmm. that went missing during World War II because of the Nazis. But unlike, it's not a painting or, monuments men kind of thing. It is. Sure. An automobile, the Bugatti Type 57 SC. Let's see if I can pronounce this right, Tim.
You got it.
La voiture noire.
I think that's pretty good. That's the best I've heard today.
Yes, nice. Which means the black car, and it is chassis number 57453. Although we'll talk about that in the theories because there are some issues with that. Mm-hmm. So Tim is on the show today because Tim and I hosted and worked on some automobile shows where we talked about mysteries and crimes and all sorts of strangeness around historically significant automobiles called autobiography. Mm-hmm. And I spent years looking up at very tall Tim Donahue talking about these things.
They may not be able to tell from the audio only format.
Yes, this is, the radio version of this is very
maybe
different.
Maybe you can. It might be obvious. I don't know.
You could listen
to this back and be like, I'm clearly taller than him by about 8 inches. So you can just hear it.
Yes, absolutely. And this is a topic that you and I almost covered in season 2 of our show, mm-hmm. but COVID hit and we could not travel to Europe and go to all these places anymore because of this thing called COVID. And so we had to scratch it, but I did a ton of research. I think I even wrote an episode for mm-hmm. this topic. So we went deep into it. I talked to Peter Mullen, who owned one of the versions of this car, who has recently passed away, RIP, Mr. Mullen, and got some insight from him. But the most amazing thing about this story is that this car, if found, is the most expensive car on the planet, bar none. Yeah. One of the other existing versions, and I'll get into the details of this in a second, is already worth $100 million or more. And so this one is sort of the special one and the one that has some a little more provenance just because of being missing and dealing with stuff like this. It is going to be more expensive than that. If it
story goes a long way. I think Bugatti actually made a version of, I think it was a Chiron. They did a voiture noir of that.
Yes, a hypercar.
It was the most expensive at the time production car. It was allegedly sold to, I think, Cristiano Ronaldo.
$16 million.
Yeah. And that's a new version that they can find. So when you factor in that it's just like in the ether somewhere, it's got all this sort of story behind it and people have been looking for it forever. And there's this huge pent up demand. I mean, it would be like the bullet car to the extreme if anyone ever rolled it out onto the stage at, Gooding or RM and was like, all right, who wants a crack at this one?
Exactly.
But it's a pretty pretty wild one if it ever shows up.
It is. So let me back up here. I'm going to fill in people with the details because my listeners on this show are not the same viewers from Autobiography that don't know as much about cars. So I want to give some significance and information about this missing masterpiece. We've got to understand the world that it came from. So the year was 1909. There's my story voice, Tim. Was that good?
I'm nervous, but also excited.
And in the small town of Molsheim, which is in the Alsace region of France, although at the time it was part of Germany, an Italian-born man named... Now, here's where my pronunciation, and Tim will tell you when we recorded the show, he always had to constantly tell me how to pronounce things, including just like American words, because I can't talk. But I've always heard Ettore Bugatti, but... Earlier, when I was re-researching this topic, I was hearing that pronounced a little differently, but I called him, I've always said, Ettore. So, yeah.
Yeah, Ettore Bugatti. It sounds Ettore Bugatti.
Yeah.
I think that's right. Because I'd said for years, admittedly, Bugatti.
Really?
I think a lot of people slide into that. And then I started hearing Bugatti from like the real, insider hardcore car people. And maybe people who can just read better and have corrected it. And I've instilled that in my children as for some reason, I think because of YouTube, my son is obsessed with Bugattis.
Oh, wow.
You've literally never seen one. But anyway, not to
that's
digress.
Crazy. No, that's amazing. So anyway, Ettore Bugatti, he founded an automobile company that would become known for basically elegance, speed, engineering, perfection. The cars that his company was building were built to race. And there's a lot of provenance because of that design, the engineering and speed and everything. It was a very highly respected car company in its original, incarnations of it. And it was in my notes. I wrote they were built to race, unlike Lamborghinis today. That's I like how your son likes Bugattis and my son likes Lamborghinis because they're on Mr. Beast videos, and I'm always like, oh God, stop! No,
the Lamborghinis have come up a few times as well, and they have a copy of like two children's books that are all about Ferraris. That are like mazes and like look and finds, but they're like about Ferrari only. So, they've had those for years in an attempt to sort of indoctrinate them a bit, admittedly, but somehow, you can't fight the other exposure systems of like, so Lamborghini is more of a thing, but I'm like, guys, it's, look at a Ferrari, look at a 296 right now. Is there a better looking car?
Yeah. Lamborghinis are built for Instagram. Bugattis were built to win races. That's the way I kind of differentiate things. Just as an example of some racing pedigree, the first ever win at the Monaco Grand Prix was a Bugatti. And that was in the early 1930s when that happened. So I'm not going to go into some of the crazy stories here, but due to the death of Ettore's son, Jean, in 1939, while he was testing the Type 57 tank, I think it was 57G tank, which Tim got to ride in on our show with his gangly head hanging out the top of it.
Yeah, I'm about 3 feet out the top of it.
So he passed away while testing one of the cars. And this is obviously World War II was gearing up in 39 and hitting the gas pedal itself. And then Ettore's death in 1947, the company went into decline and its original incarnation of the company folded in the early 1950s. But we're here to talk about La Voiture Noire. You're welcome for saying things relatively close.
Good enough.
And the missing car. In late 1936, Jean Bugatti was a very special designer, honestly. I know there's a little bit of like, what do they call it? Like kids in Hollywood that have famous parents. What's that term?
Nepotism? Nepo baby?
Nepo baby. Even though there's a bit of like a nepo baby because his dad runs the company and he got to work there as a designer, basically as a kid, mm-hmm. He was actually a very talented designer. And it was a great mix of his designs with his dad's engineering to make these cars. And Jean even became the head of the company in his 20s. Mm-hmm. He was an incredible designer, to say the least. And he was inspired to make a sports coupe that was influenced highly by basically planes. And that went into a lot of the designs of some of these Bugattis in the mid-30s. And he officially named one of these cars the Type 57 SC Atlantique. Four were built. Three are accounted for today. Tim, we're remote. I'm not giving away any secrets. That's the way a lot of people do podcasts now. I don't know if you can pull up really quick just a picture of the black car, La Voiture Noire. I would love for you to sort of describe it, and especially sort of the dorsal fin aspect of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually just going to say while I'm doing that, it's interesting how the Bugatti story sort of eerily mirrors the Ferrari story with Enzo and Dino being an engineer and designer, and both sort of tragically dying young. Dino was from an illness, but it's just sort of an odd story where they're both such hardcore racing driver families.
We
don't get too deep in the weeds on car stuff as this is not that show, but you're like, oh, you've got the front fenders sort of very separated, like almost like a Morgan or something, if you're familiar with those right now, which a lot of people are going, what? It's just a very curvy, swoopy, almost like Dick Tracy dramatic, it looks more like an art project that went well than like a car. You know, it's the kind of thing you just can't even conceive of people making now. And because I'm sure those are all like hand hammered panels, but you've got these big swoopy fenders over the front wheels, and it just looks like a series of teardrops that are sort of like in motion. You know, it's a really elegant looking car. I have come across a few people who don't like this era of Bugattis, but mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you, man. It's a very pretty car.
Yeah, it's unbelievably pretty. And I love that you used the word elegant, because I think elegant, as much as it was like built to go fast, it's a very elegant looking car, especially in black. And the SC in the name stood for, and this is where I definitely am going to mispronounce these because I didn't double check how to pronounce them, but sorbes and compressor, something like that. That basically means it's a supercharged car. He wanted it to go even faster than other incarnations of models he was making. And it had other upgrades from other Type 57s. And yeah,
it's funny how all that sounds better in another language, and it's the most mundane description. Because you're like, this is the new Toyota black car turbocharged. You're like, that's the name of the car. But once it becomes Voiture Noire SC something, you know, whatever, it's like it becomes so interesting and not sort of absolutely boring like it is in English.
Absolutely.
It's really sad. Unless maybe in other languages, calling it the black car in English is actually kind of fun or cool. But
yeah.
And lame.
It does. It always sounds lame in English, but I won't get too much in the weeds on car stuff today, because this story is strange in its own right. And why is it strange? And on this podcast, and that's because, like I mentioned earlier, it is a missing treasure, but also, like any good mystery or adventure, the Nazis are involved. Yep. And the story goes that the car, after it was made and Jean Bugatti would drive it around a bit, it was gifted to driver Robert Benoist for winning Le Mans in, I think it was 37 or 38. And it may have been then also given to another driver right after that. There is some debate over exactly who was driving it when, but by most accounts, Jean Bugatti drove the car most often, and it was also never formally owned by anybody. So even though it may have been given to some people to drive around, it was never like, hey, this is your car forever. It was just kind of like, hey, use this every day and for a while. So it was never registered per se. And then Ettore Bugatti was very aware that the Nazis encroaching and coming into France, he saw the writing on the wall that like, they're going to take over France. And this is not going to be good for my company. It's not going to be good for my cars. He was not just worried about Nazis just taking automobiles, his very prized automobiles, but he was worried about his factory being used to like make weapons and, or just completely destroyed and taken over. So he famously hid a lot of his vehicles, and some of which we've talked, you and I have talked about before on our show, and other things like the 57, we've already mentioned that you get to drive in, which was actually buried underground.
Yeah, it was in a crypt for the duration of the war and then retrieved and then changed hands a few times. But yeah, it has a really wild life to.
Absolutely. And other cars of Bugatti's were sent to a location in Bordeaux, which I think the tank was sent to Bordeaux as well. And it's because they did have another, I don't know if it was a factory per se, but they had like another location in Bordeaux, not just in Molsheim. But the idea was they're going to be safer in Bordeaux. So a lot of these cars were loaded onto trains and sent to Bordeaux. The black car was loaded onto a train on... Where's the date I wrote down? I think it's February 18th, 1941. Listeners, correct me on that. Give me a little message if I got that wrong. That's off the top of my head. I think it was February 18th, 1941, loaded onto a train, sent to Bordeaux. And that is the last anyone, at least publicly, has seen the car. And like I mentioned, while there's other Bugattis that were hidden in and around Bordeaux and during the war that were since recovered, the black car disappeared forever. And the only person that may have known where it was or most about it was Ettore himself. And he died in 1947 and never passed on the information about what could or what he thought happened to the car. And if found today, like I've already mentioned before, it is the most expensive car in the world if found today, no matter the condition. If it's in shit condition, it is still the most valuable car in the world. Unless Tim is like, oh no, it's got to be, you know, a Ferrari from,
That Mercedes, that whatever, like, aluminum or the light body kind of early SL or whatever it was, or Gullwing. It wasn't even Gullwing. No, but some racing Mercedes was like $100 and something million. It was crazy. But, if it's over 100, it's definitely in the running for most expensive car. Yeah. I mean, all the 250 GTOs are catching up, but they're not even $100 million.
And so if you were presented, Tim, with La Voiture Noire and you could not sell it, you had to like use it as a daily driver or a Pacifica, Chrysler Pacifica minivan, which would you take?
Just from a reliability standpoint, storage standpoint, Shorty, let me ask you about the stow and go capacity and of Voiture Noire and also the insurance costs of running a deep nine figure. Not deep nine figure, but nine figure car, might not be too bad.
Yeah.
I think for the kids, they would probably prefer the fun swoopy car that may or may not be able to get in and out of my gate, and down the driveway. But, it's a hard sell. If it's a triple black, if it's a hybrid Pacifica, it's like, forget it. It's not even a competition.
Yeah. we would constantly make fun of Tim on the show. He's obsessed with Ferraris, but also Pacificas. And it's like the most interesting, you know, combination of vehicles in the world, but it also makes perfect sense. It's kind of like the sport side and then the very practical side of things.
If you're going to put up a picture of me for this, for some reason, I'll just send you the photo from the Ferrari factory where they had a Pacifica with the Ferrari badge on it. For like internal like client movement and stuff like that. And I was like, what do you want for this car? I'll find a way. He's like, it's not for sale. It's like, this is the one you're into. It's like a black Pacifica with red leather seats with just literally a Ferrari decal on the side. And I was like, I need the Ferrifica. That's what this has Ferrifica. To come home with me.
He's
like, it's not for sale. It's not for sale.
Oh, that's lovely.
He probably thought I was nuts. Cause I mean, there were literally like, you know, dozens and dozens of Ferraris. I mean, we're at the factory. They're all over the place. And I'm like, what is that? That's the one. Anywho.
Ferrifica. I can't believe I forgot about that too. That's so fun. You do need to share that photo with me. All right. So what happened to the black car? And there are multiple theories, and a lot of them go into the weeds of various like identifying VIN number things and confusion over that and back and forth. That I'm not going to go too deep into because literally it makes my head spin. But there are people that think three of the existing Type 57s are actually, one of them could actually be the black car, and there's a mistake. There weren't four made. Most accounts, most historians and car aficionados and collectors will say that, no, there is four, and this one is missing for a variety of reasons. But one of the theories, just to share that, is that the, one of the existing cars is that missing car. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that the exact chassis number would change essentially. And so that creates confusion. Also, records back then in car companies, you and I know this, they're not the best. Like, they didn't take care of their paperwork all the time. They would change numbers. They would, you know, modify a car and change the number, but it was originally something else.
Yeah, swap parts constantly, like, you know, engines and you know, substantial pieces of the car, especially race cars, would just get swapped out, changed, traded, whatever, or broken and replaced or whatever. And yeah, they may not have kept up with their handwritten notes as well as you'd hope.
Yeah, it's very much just like if you had a garage and you worked on cars and machines yourself. Like, they were smaller companies. They weren't big corporations that had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people working where they have to really organize the stuff. It was a very different time. And anyway, so that is one of the theories. There is a recent story I came across that La Voiture Noire survived the war and was bought by a Belgian in the 1950s. However, people that have really been searching for this car have kind of run into a dead end with that. So it was probably a little bit of a fake story that happened. And there are a few of those out and about in the world where people are like, oh, this is it. And another theory is that it was hidden in plain sight. And it was put on the train, but it was later kind of taken away from all the other Bugattis being hidden. And it was just given to an individual to store and then forgotten about. And that kind of stuff does happen. Like, there is validity to that in the car world, in the classic car world, where like someone just inherits a car and it's stored somewhere and they don't know what it is or how valuable it is. And they just keep it for decades and decades and decades. That does happen. Yeah. So it could be out there and could be the most valuable barn find ever. Another theory suggests that the vehicle never made it out of the factory and was actually captured by the Nazis. And obviously it's war, there's chaos. It could have gotten destroyed. It could have gotten put somewhere with some other valuables that they were stealing and taking and then forgotten about, or in a warehouse that also was bombed. If that had happened, or it was stolen and whoever has it knows it was stolen and that family has kept it secret ever since, which happens in the art world. So, you know, that could happen.
Yeah. When people have enough money that a car like that, that they know is worth a huge amount, isn't worth, you know, divulging. It's a wild scenario, but we've also seen a lot of stories of cars being scrapped for the war effort. It could have been parked in a garage and somebody didn't even know. And they're like, hey, metal, grab it and just rip it up. And that's the end of it. So there are a million ways that goes wrong, which is why it's incredible that any of them from that era are still around, like the 57G tank at the Simeon Museum. But you hope it's sitting there under a tarp.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a part of me that's thinking we should just go to France and start buying storage lockers at those auctions. I'm not sure if they do that anywhere but the United States, but just start dropping 100 euro all over, you know, rural France in the hopes that we uncover one of the most famous missing cars of all time.
Yeah, that would. Yeah,
and a DB5 is sitting right next to it from Goldfinger.
James Bond stolen. Right. Yeah, another theory is that it could have just, and this is a simple, sad one, but it could have been destroyed during an air raid, and one of the Bugatti factories or warehouses was bombed during the war. So if it was in there, it would be completely destroyed. The reason we can't confirm that, and historians can't confirm it, and people spending a lot of their time and resources hunting for this car can't confirm it, is because this was hidden. So even if it was in the building, they didn't keep track of it. Like they weren't like, oh, here's a, you know, the invoice list of what is being hidden in that warehouse.
And there might have been three people on Earth, if that, that even knew that it was there.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this point, they're probably not around likely. And, you know, they as well may have, you know, they may have died in all of that, unfortunately. So, yeah, the dots to connect are very, very tricky.
Yes. And I also want to add with the Nazi thing, too. And you've come across some stories that I don't even think you're allowed to talk about in this valuable car world. But if the Nazis did get a hold of it, and they did sell it or give it to some sort of aristocrat that was supporting the Nazis, and then that aristocrat kind of hid away all the goods that they got during the war to keep it from, you know, people trying to get back these things after the war, it could very well have made its hands into some kind of owner or collector in the Middle East or Asia, which is where a lot of valuable cars go and then disappear in terms of like record keeping and out of the eyes of the West. So there is a world where that it could be out there.
You know, it could be somewhere. I think I know who I would call to ask. our old buddy Christopher Marinello to get on the case. But there are I mean, kind of endless possibilities. It could be also at the bottom of a lake or whatever that other Bugatti was.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it could have been on a ship that was crossing the Atlantic that, you know, got torpedoed, or I mean, who knows? It's just sadly, you know, we won't know until we know, or we'll continue just to not know, which is a terrible sentence. But you know, it's like we'll just be stuck in the stasis until somebody opens the door to a barn or finds a crypt in, you know, a field in France, and lo and behold, there's a car in it. And then they, you know, call somebody in and then hopefully get excited that they just absolutely won the lottery. So,
But
I hope we get some closure to it, because it's always fun. It's just like that, you know, the DB5 from James Bond being kind of gone. You hope one day it sort of resurfaces, because it's so fun for people who enjoy cars to see these things. I mean, they're sort of historical, and now there's this huge story attached to it. So it adds another layer of mystery. I mean, just like seeing the 57G tank, knowing where it's been and sort of what, you know, what it went through, so to speak, it's incredible that it still exists and that it, you know, still drives. And, Dr. Simeon was out cruising around in his parking lot, and it was willing to drive me around in it in light rain, no less. But
absolutely,
it's really cool. It's fun for people to
and
see
I
these
think
things and enjoy them.
That Bugatti that Tim's referencing that we did a story on, because it also was hidden and buried during the war, and won a ton of races, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Le Mans 39, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And Dr. Simeon, who also has passed away, but the Simeon Museum exists in Pennsylvania, and people should go visit it. It's awesome. It's a bunch of very historically significant automobiles that he had that all work. That was part of it, is they have to work and they have to be close to original.
Yep.
But that was his favorite car to drive, was that Bugatti. Out of all the cars he has, I think that was his favorite car to drive, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
so it's still, you know, an amazing piece of machinery and artwork. And here, I'm going to read something. This is from a few years ago on thedrive.com, to quote them. And it says, earlier this week in a now deleted social media post, Reddit user, a lot of weird letters and numbers there, published the below photos with the caption, "This was found in a barn in France. The entire car has been verified by historians as the Lavatoire Noir, but politics has stopped it from being shown to the public just yet. The car never reached the destination it was supposed to on the train. It had actually been kept a secret and disassembled at the house of a close friend of Ettore Bugatti's due to Ettore's death. 2 years after the war, he never had the chance to go back and collect the car, so there it sat for decades, simply a shell with its parts in a barn." That's the end quote. However, that has never been confirmed, and people have people have said, no, that's not the car, from this article a few years ago. The reason I wanted to share that, though, even though people that know what they're talking about a lot more than me say that, no, that's not the car, is I do believe a situation like this can happen. I do think this car it could very well be out there, and you may come across a story like this in the future where someone's like, yeah, I found this. holy crap. And then you find out from like the grandfather's father's cousin or whatever, that like, oh, well, he was friends of Vittori's and hid it in the barn and never went back for it or whatever. So I do think those kind of things can, and they do happen.
And I think if somebody found it or if it did pop up, people would take notice and say something because it is such a dramatic looking car. It's not like, oh, I found a, you know, 84 Civic that had rusted away, like called the newspapers. It's like, no, this is a very dramatic, swoopy, kind of almost spaceshipy looking thing that you'd be like, this looks like something I should call somebody. I should call a car type person who is immediately going to make me a lowball offer and I'll take it off my hands.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's an amazing story. And that's kind of it. I wish, you know, I had more information about where it could be outside of these kind of vague theories. But so does everybody. And it's still a story that's always fascinated me because of how amazing this car is. And because of other Bugattis, I forgot about the one hidden in the lake, by the way. That's also an amazing story that was at the bottom of a lake and found. And, you know, just incredible things out there. And, you know, this is a real treasure and a real treasure hunt with Nazis, which you always have to love. And I did, like I mentioned earlier, Peter Mullen, who owns, or his, I would say his estate, I guess, owns one of them, or I think still owns one of the existing Bugattis. And I got to speak to him, I don't know, 4 years ago or whatever it was. And I can't remember what his theories were on this car. And I think he was along the lines of what I'm saying, which is he thinks it still could be out there. But my memory could be a little weird because we talked for maybe an hour and talked about a lot of things because we were hoping to go actually film the existing one he had at his museum at the time, again, pre-COVID. So I can't remember specifically what he said, but he knows, you know, all the owners of the existing ones and the paperwork and the VIN numbers. And he knew all that information that I get very confused by because it does get really sort of chaotic in its mess, but he's done all the research. So he knows all of it like the back of his hand. If I remember correctly, I think he thinks it's still out there and we could very well find it one day.
I think that's possible.
Amazing. Yeah.
Even under good circumstances with companies like Ford that have, you know, great records, it's still hard to find cars that are, you know, much newer and, you know, are hidden away somewhere. But it's a difficult one. But hopefully there's a fun break in the case in our lifetime. And
people can go see it. And a couple of years ago, too, I remember reading that France was putting together basically like a modern day Monuments Men, which was the group of soldiers that was going out to protect artwork that was stolen from the Nazis. Mm-hmm. And so they had like a modern version of that they were organizing. I don't know what they're focused on. I don't know if they're still around because I think this was also pre-COVID. But I do know that there were people that were literally planning to go out and look for things like this and other artwork and statues and records and, you know, all that kind of stuff that had been stolen and lost during the war. Because that's still a real thing. By the way, there's still bombs from unexploded ordnances from World War I in Europe where like there's areas you can't go to. And that's now over 100 years ago. So it's pretty fascinating what can happen.
So don't go poking around too much.
Be careful where you dig.
Don't go willy-nilly to the French countryside, sticking, you know, shovels into the ground.
Well, yikes. So that's our story. This is a relatively short episode. I had a scheduling conflict with another guest, so I had to do something kind of short and sweet.
I wasn't your first choice.
You're never my first choice. You're always, always top 20 somewhere in there.
19 people canceled on you. Maybe I shouldn't have done this. Is this bad for my career?
It's probably great for your career. It's great. No, it's
fine. Kind of
hurt. But thank you for taking the time to do it. We're both so busy this week, and I really appreciate doing it. It's fun to talk about cars again with you in some sort of entertainment capacity. And still get to mention Pacificas and Ferraris, which we can't.
And I worked Ferrari in several times.
Exactly. It happens naturally. There's no way you can't do
help it.
Yeah. Do you want to promote anything? Do you want people to know anything about you other than you're just very tall?
Other than I think you should go test drive a Pacifica. I think you're really going to enjoy it if you need the space. Like I do, I've got three kids. It's pretty great. I will say my wife is not the biggest fan of it. And as she is the one driving it 95% of the time, but it's also like, you know, we live in the valley, it's hot. I opted for a triple black. So it's, you know, it's a warm car, but the space is great for, you know, we've done drives up to Yosemite and all that. And it's
are you an affiliate marketer for Chrysler?
And no.
Like, do you have a specific link? Like, so just go to Chrysler.com/Tim Donahue and get 20% off.
You get 20% off your Pacifica, which would actually be pretty meaningful. No. That's really about it.
Nice.
Yeah, just go buy a Pacifica, and I'll smile a little, one more star in the sky when that every time that happens.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Tim. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, man.
Thank you for listening to A Study of Strange and bearing with me as I pronounce La Voiture Noire multiple times in that episode. Please take a quick second, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating and review on Apple or Spotify. It goes a long way towards helping others find our show. Next week, we're going to be shifting gears again and talking about ghosts. Basically, just a nice discussion about spirits, ghosts, some stories about ghosts, and what they could be if they're real. Lastly, if you want to support the show and or just get more content like this, check out our Substack that you can subscribe to. You can find it through our support tab on our website, astudyofstrange.com. Thank you and good night.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
Si conoce a alguien que vive de forma ilegal en Estados Unidos, pronto lo volverá a ver, porque volverá a casa. Me llamo Christy Nom, soy la Secretaria de Seguridad Nacional de Estados Unidos. Puede evitar problemas descargándose la app CBP Home y deportándose de forma segura. Recibirá ayuda económica, un vuelo gratis y la posibilidad de volver de forma legal. Si no lo hace, lo encontraremos, multaremos y echaremos a la fuerza. Bajo el fuerte liderazgo del presidente Trump, nuestras leyes se cumplen y nuestra frontera es segura.